Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 351. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with that hoedown boy, Tim Elliott.
Top of the morning to you, boys.
And Mr. Green Jeans, Phil Wilson.
Yeah, that started out as I thought, the Pete. It's so sweet, but it turned out it kind of a little bluegrassy thing. So
it did. Yeah, so. When I first heard it, I thought it was a little Celtic.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it was not.
Morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So we all actually got together yesterday to talk about the podcast, and we actually had breakfast together. We enjoyed each other's company in person. So yeah. We really should have just done the podcast there. I think the people at Perkins would have appreciated that.
Well, we probably should have, but we should mention just some highlights. We're gonna shorten the show a bit on purpose because people are commuting. The average commute's 20 minutes each way, so we're going to try to keep it under about 40 minutes.
We're being scientific,
yes.
Rather than just say, "Yeah, this shit's too long."
Yeah. So we're gonna do more guests probably every week. We're gonna cut out the security tip of the week, even though sniff. I'll just have to figure that out. We're gonna continue with the cool thing of the week, and we're gonna have more guest hosts and stuff and so forth. So that's just some highlights. But
I don't know if I would have shared all that, but okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just thought I'd tell people, people who are listening and might have an interest anyway. So we should just touch on mini demo for a sec before we get rolling here.
Yeah, another good lineup of folks. I didn't have a chance to get to it myself, but I would always want to acknowledge the fact that, it still continues to be a huge draw. A lot of folks, I followed along in Twitter where I could, and saw some great highlights. So congratulations to the folks at Mini Star again for another event, and Mini Bar is coming up in April, I believe. Right? Am I correct on that?
I believe you are. Yes, I think it's the 24th. But I'm not certain. No, 23rd maybe. I'll have to figure it out and get in the show notes at some point. But there's some really interesting stuff going on at Mini Demo. VidComet, I think, is pretty interesting in terms of leaving short form video comments on your on your website or your blog or whatever. And that of course will never be abused by anyone.
No, not at all.
There will never be anything horrible or embarrassing to be done there. But at any rate, so anything going on up in startup world other than our pals at Mini Demo?
I think one of the bigger stories I saw this week was
Docalytics.
Docalytics, which I believe presented at Mini Demo, didn't they? I'm trying to remember if they did or not. But they work out of Cocoa. So
did you know those guys when you were there?
No, I didn't know because they're in the St. Paul.
That's right. Okay.
Cocoa, so yeah. Which is the original Cocoa, which right? Kind of was a fun
classic. The classic Cocoa.
The classic Cocoa classic. So they were acquired by Contently.
Yeah.
I don't know what Contently is. So other than
New York based media technology firm. Come on.
Okay. There you go.
Read the story here.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't remember if Docalytics actually presented it. I'm sure they did, but I do remember seeing them. I believe at beta.mn. So
yeah.
Or beta.mn.
So. Looks like they're increasing their employees too after the acquisition. So that's good for the
Lord. That is a good thing.
Well, I'm kind of amazed. I mean, obviously, your place, Phil, BuzzFeed, is New York based, and then this Contently is New York based, and then there's also a president of BuzzFeed who left in New York to start a video.
That's Mark Wilkie, the former CTO of BuzzFeed, came home to Minneapolis. One of the reasons that BuzzFeed is in Minneapolis is because of Mark's ties here. But
the guy I'm mentioning is a guy named John Steinberg.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you meant.
Yeah. And he launched a new company.
In New York?
Out of New York. I'm trying to find the name of it. But at any rate, I am really amazed at how much stuff is happening in New York. mean, it's really on fire.
It's a city that never sleeps.
It is.
Thanks.
That's right. And Steve, that. Steve, yes. I think you should know that if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Even here?
Wow.
God, thanks.
It's up to you, New York.
Yeah. And I'm moving on up to the east side.
Well, maybe Stratasys, the 3D printing company, they should move. Yeah. And my wife will quit whining about how much money she's lost on the stock, but they apparently, by the way,
did you encourage her to buy stock in Stratasys?
Let's not go there. Anyway, so Stratasys strutted its stuff during New York's Fashion Week.
Yeah,
and
printed dresses.
Yeah, printed dresses. A good article here in the Star Tribune. And, you know, they continue to push and push and push. And, you know, at some point it's going to turn the corner because, I mean, Stratasys is the dominant force in 3D printing.
Because everybody else went out of business.
Well, there's that. But they're also they're taking risks. And doing quite a bit, but really we'll put a link in the show notes. There's some pretty interesting 3D printed dresses that were shown, and not my cup of tea, but that's not the point.
Right.
They're not.
Also start
futuristic.
Yeah.
Because also, did you notice that our friend Aaron Cardell over at HomeSpotter picked up another, well, almost $1 million, $925K in investing. That's great. Yep. So, love Aaron. Just a great guy. Built a great product. Built more than one great product, but HomeSpotter is really what former mobile realty apps is just taken off.
Yeah. So. Well, hey, I just wanted to mention one other thing, too. We had one more article in here about this broadband alliance that was formed to serve southern Minnesota, and Julio wrote this article and, talking about this fiber optic network that is going to, be in northern Iowa and southern Minnesota and what a big deal that is. But simultaneously, I don't know if you guys have been paying any attention to this, but Comcast is moving pretty fast on their DOCSIS 3.1 modem technology in terms of rollouts. And so I anticipate that we're going to see some fiber-like speeds out of Comcast in the not-too-distant future. And I'm wondering what that's going to do in the Twin Cities area specifically in terms of, pretty major accelerations in broadband.
Hmm.
That should be...
That's the way technology and competition works. Someone else will do something else. But the question really is, do we really need this kind of speed for doing what we do?
Well, that's like saying, do I need a bigger closet? Because no matter how big it is, it's going to get full.
I don't know. Well, I'm skeptical. I think we've almost reached a point where, like even 100 megs is plenty for most people, even if you're doing a lot of streaming and whatnot. When you get to 1 and 2 gigs and higher, it's sort of like, how fast can it be?
Well, but just remember that 4K UHD streaming is 3x what 1080p streaming is in terms of, bits that are that are coming across. So that's some pretty hefty bandwidth that's required. Of course, you know what, though? I mean, Phil, are you still having issues with streaming over Wi-Fi with your Apple TV?
I'm not having real issues, but yeah, it's, I could never get the Mocha boxes to work simply because of the way that my cable is set up. So I kind of gave up. I threw in the towel on that.
But. Oh, bummer.
It's okay. I mean, it's all right. I can deal with it. And
yeah,
it was just one of those things. It was getting to the point where, if I just get another modem, it would be cheaper.
Yeah. Well, just tell Lori, we're going to have to tear all the walls out. Let's do a little remodeling project.
We're going to do a whole rewire here.
Yeah, just so we can have faster TV.
Yeah.
That'll go over well.
I upgraded to an Asus router, and it's one of the more expensive ones. It's still like $100 or something.
Yeah.
And it's actually works really well for streaming.
Yeah. So. Huh.
Very nice.
Yeah, I just use those Mocha boxes because it's even down in the exercise room, which no matter what would have horrible Wi-Fi. It just because it's just the way it is. There's too many walls. It's like a Faraday cage. There's stairs and all that on one of the walls. And if it wasn't for the Mocha box, it would just be forget streaming in there. And so now, I mean, we've got an old Apple TV hooked up in there, and it just, I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah.
It comes through nice and fast. And
yeah. So. Well, I remember even calling Charter saying, can you help a brother out with these Mocha boxes? What?
Yeah, they don't know what they are.
What?
Oh, come on. Really?
I'm serious. Oh, man. I am serious. They had no idea. They bounced me around to a couple of people. So what are these again? Okay.
Oh, geez. Hey, you guys are in the cable business.
I know. Well.
Okay.
But maybe, you know, they won't have to worry about, having to deal with cable through their own boxes. Did you see this FCC ruling, guys? Did you see this?
Yeah.
You can get cable through Apple, Google, Amazon, and Android. But the FCC says it's okay.
Absolutely.
Well, how do they implement this, though? That's the question. You know, is it going to be all through apps? Where the cable company, well, I don't know. That's the experience of apps versus the linear channels is.
It's not that far. They're not really that far away from it because so many of the services that we get through cable are available online now with your cable subscription. It really does indicate that you really need another box if you can get it through your Apple TV or Roku or something.
Well, but here's the one thing is that if there's an app for the new Apple TV, it's the Pluto TV. And remember you, Tim, you talked about Pluto is one of your cool things.
What?
And, cool. So Pluto TV is an app and it actually has multiple streaming channels and you can flip through them and they're just playing things in real time.
Yeah.
So it's like watching live television.
That's how I watch Sky TV.
Well, and Sky, I was just going to say, and Sky TV is one of the live channels that's actually running. Mm-hmm. And so I could see, cause I thought the same thing, Tim, about a bunch of apps and, you know, what if you've got to stop, I want to go see what's on AMC. And so you got to quit the app you're in and then find the AMC app and then launch the AMC app. That's not going to fly.
So yeah. Have some unified, guide or something, which, I think if Apple does this, they're going to have one app. It'll be the Apple Live TV app or probably have some good name for it. And you'll just go into this one app and all the channels will live there, sort of like Pluto, and you'll be able to switch them to whatever's on. And then there'll have to be a way to do catch up stuff. So on demand, you know, of older episodes. So hopefully that day will come and it looks like the FCC is making strides to make that happen.
Yep. It's moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. It appears
so. I think the other biggest thing that we can talk about this week is obviously the ongoing Apple FBI controversy.
Oh man!
So I think the one thing that, and I don't think.
Can you first just define it? Just I mean, not that people haven't heard about it, but just define it first.
Oh yeah, the fact that the FBI is asking, or actually has
Department of Justice.
Department of Justice has served Apple to help. Unlock an iPhone that belonged to one of the San Bernardino terrorists. So, and of course the Apple is pushing back. They don't have, according to Tim Cook, they don't have the ability to crack the code. So they would have to build software to bypass the code.
What they're asking specifically is to turn off the feature where.
Right. That's right.
Passwords, it erases your iPhone.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you peel back the details of this story, the terrorist's iPhone is a 5C, which doesn't have Touch ID, therefore doesn't have the secure element, therefore has much lower grade encryption that could probably be hacked in and of itself. But the issue here is they want software to be built so that they can defeat that, that 10 tries deal.
So they can make mistakes.
So they can do a brute force attack on the four pin code and hit it with 10,000 different numbers and they'll get the one.
Well, here's what's weird is that the terrorist's Apple ID password was changed when the phone got into government custody.
Which is that's the thing that is intriguing to me because that report came out. That report came out what yesterday or day before? Yeah, it was yesterday, and it was the one thing I can't clarify is, okay, so why, how, and who? There really are no real details behind this other than the fact that the Apple team that was asked to take a look at the phone said, hey, it was that the ID was changed with what? Within 24 hours of the FBI getting their hands on it.
Right.
So,
and so, so somebody forgot to turn off the 10 attempt aspect of the phone, of the iOS operating system, and then they forgot the password.
Yeah.
Well, you know? So I mean, if the Minovate gang consulting company were engaged on this, we would, of course, make a digital virtual copy of the phone and make 1,000 copies of it and try 10 codes each time. It would take a while, but we'd probably come up with a script. You know, we get one of Phil's developers to help us in that regard. And we would crack this phone open. So I think that something else is going on here. And the conspiracy theorist Robert X. Cringely has a pretty interesting take on it.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest thing that I walked away from the whole week controversy was the okay, so what's really going on? Because if you stop and think about it, it's, you know, hacking an iPhone open should not require, you know, judicial involvement.
Well, you know, and a lot of this stuff is political theater, but also, you know, it makes a lot of sense if you think about it from a conspiracy standpoint, in that Apple, the primary reason they're doing so well in China is because they've gone with encryption. And so, you know, people don't have to be concerned that the Chinese government's going to get a hold of their device, open it up, and then, you know, throw them in prison for the rest of their life. And it's same thing with a lot of other countries. And so that's one of the reasons that Apple's doing so well in these countries. And also the other one that I thought was really interesting was the perspective that if, in fact, the U.S. government and if Congress is successful in legislating back doors or weakening encryption, that other countries will immediately follow suit. That they're gonna do what the U.S. does in terms of leadership on that issue, and so, you know, that this is all coming to a head, and you know, at the end of the day, I don't know exactly what's going on, but all I know is that there's no way I'm giving up encryption.
Right. No. Right. And Apple's doing the right thing in resisting this. It's just that I think that. That Cringely's article is a little bit extreme, but he's a kernel of the right idea, which is this is not a case of opening one particular iPhone for a terrorist investigation. This is to establish some case law so that in the future they can, you know, demand that organizations open up, you know, or develop software backdoors that would allow the government to go in and get access to the information on the phone. And it's only getting harder and harder for the government to get in there now with Touch ID. Although if you have a terrorist that you've killed, you can obviously get his fingerprints. But I'm sure that terrorists are probably not using the Touch ID. They're probably continuing to use PIN codes or some other such thing, which are harder to break than... you know, than having access to your thumbprint.
Yeah.
So.
Well, how many characters do you use for your password?
Well, Android is only 4. I know that iOS is 6, I think, now.
Well, you can do 6, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you want to do it the longer, the more tries, because 4 is only 10,000 combinations. So it could easily be brute forced.
Well, maybe not in 10 tries.
Well, no, but I mean, you know, you could obviously make digital copies and just burn them, you know, without affecting the original phone.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that the NSA or even the FBI has probably cracked this thing open, but this is just to try to establish case law. So that's really the nub of the issue here.
Right. Well, it's interesting because the you know, I've had pushback from our good buddy Darren Klum on Facebook about this whole issue. And, you know, he said, well, you know, Apple's got the key for iCloud so they can get into iCloud backups. And, of course, the San Bernardino shooter's iCloud backup had stopped a month before the attack. So there's all kinds of stuff that is on the phone that's more current. And I just, you know, I said to Darren on Facebook in the comments, I said, hey, I don't use iCloud specifically, and I don't store my keys. You know, Apple will store your key for File Vault, for example, or they'll store your key for iCloud. And I don't store my keychain in the cloud. I don't store any of those keys in the cloud. Nothing. So,
do you also have one of those wallets that blocks the RFID readers?
Well, I don't have to because I wear lead underwear because of all the gamma rays that come from space. So,
right.
No, I don't. Oh my God! I know. I know. Well, you know, at the end of the day, though, too, you know doggone well the intelligence agencies have root kits and there's hidden root kits now that are chip level, and there's chip level stuff you know, not only, and one of the things, this is what I always find really, really amusing, is when you're watching television shows, especially the crime dramas, where the procedural ones where, you know, they you know, keep the guy on the phone. He's on a burner phone, right? They want to find out where he is. Yeah, the criminal. And the thing is that you can recognize people by voice print. And especially with all the calls that have been captured by the NSA, you know, they algorithmically have gone through, I'm sure, and captured all the voice prints. But then there's facial recognition, and there's even gait analysis, which they're using for drone kills over in the Middle East, where the way you walk is unique to you, like your voice print and your fingerprint. And so, you know, there's all this stuff that I'm sure we have no clue how pervasive it is.
Well, I think the horse is out of the barn on this one.
Uh-oh.
The horse is out of the barn?
Yeah. What,
you mean this horse?
Steve's security tip of the week.
Yay! It's the security tip of the week.
Are you sure you're not going to miss the security tip of the week?
This is the last one, huh?
Well, so the tip of the week is I've got 7 practical tips to keep yourself from getting hacked. And one of my clients had her email hacked. And fortunately, one of the systems administrators caught it and was able to change the password before it got changed again, or before it got changed, I should say. And it was, she doesn't know where it got captured. Maybe it got captured on public Wi-Fi or whatever. But you know, the thing is if you lose your password for your email, you're screwed. Cause then somebody can go into all these other services and do a lost your password and steal everything. Well, we already talked about passcodes. So the number one is to keep a passcode enabled on your phone. Make it a 6-digit, because a 4-digit has 10,000 combinations, but a 6-digit one has 1,000,000 combinations.
There you go.
Number two.
So that means the FBI would have to buy 1,000,000. No.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. No, actually 100,000, right? Number two, turn on 2-step verification or authentication for every online account you can, because you can do it now with, obviously, LastPass and Dropbox and Google and even WordPress.com. I mean, there's all these different sites that you can use 2-step verification. And that means that even if somebody does get your password, they also have to have your phone to be able to pull up the authenticator to be able to put in the verification code. Number three, use different passwords for your logins. You know, use something like 1Password or LastPass. I got to tell you, it's a head slap when I sit down with somebody and I just said, you know, you can't use this exact same simple password everywhere. Email, Vimeo, Dropbox, you know, all these different sites, Freshdesk, everything that you're on. You can't use the same password because if somebody cracks it, that's it. They're into everything. And there goes your business.
So you're saying Gorilla 123 is not a good password?
It depends on how you spell it. If it's G-O-R, that's probably not good. But G-U-E-R-I-L-L-A, that's probably all right.
No, change it to right now to 321 Gorilla.
So. There you go.
Ah, okay, good.
There you go. So are you worried about your chats being intercepted or archived? So number four is use an app called Signal, which is end-to-end encrypted chat for iOS and Android. And it uses 256-bit encryption. And, you know, I'm sure that if we were talking to our friends at the FBI or we had somebody on right now from the Department of Justice, they'd say, well, that's how the Paris things happened, because we couldn't, you know, capture the information because they were using an encrypted app like WhatsApp.
Because they were using not encrypted text. They were using text in the open.
Right.
Those guys on their phones.
Right.
So, you know.
Number five, are you worried your calls aren't secure? And so, you know, there's things like, you know, if you're giving out passwords or you're having conversations about your startup or new product or patents or whatever it is, FaceTime on iOS and also that Signal app I just mentioned will both let you make end-to-end encrypted audio calls. So if you want to have a private conversation that, you know, is encrypted from your phone to your recipient's phone, you know, if it's FaceTime, great, but if not, use Signal. Number six, a VPN. Of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that all your web traffic's in safe hands. You know, for example, if you use the Tor browser, but at the same time you're using a BitTorrent app and you're downloading a movie, guess what? Even if you're using a VPN, they can still track that BitTorrent back to your IP address. And so you got to be careful about the stuff you're running. And most of us, if you're on a Mac or whatever, or you either look in the tray on Windows, but you look in the upper menu bar, most people have a lot of stuff running. You know, they've got all these apps running in the background. All those things are talking to the servers, and all of them can phone home. And so even if you're over a VPN, you're still going to be protected from browsing, but you're going to be seen. Your IP address is going to be exposed in all those different background apps. So just be aware of that. Number seven, if a link inside of an email looks suspicious, please, for God's sakes, don't open it. That's the number one way that malware spread, and it's really a really easy way to implant viruses that can also take over a network. So that's how these ransomware work, where companies are extorted for millions to unlock all their files on all the computers and on the network. Some email providers like Google's Gmail, and I believe Yahoo's now doing it, but they scan every attachment for viruses and malware. And that's one of the reasons that I manage all of my email addresses. I have 25 now in one Gmail account, and everything comes in there. And everything is scanned, and I get, of course, about 2,000 spams a day. But at any rate, that's my tip, or very my nice. Seven tips, I guess.
It's your seven tips. Yep. Okay, so you're covered for 7 weeks.
Yeah, there we go.
So there you have it. Well, let's take a look at the cool thing of the week before we talk about any events coming up. And let's start with Steve.
Okay. Well, a little over a year ago, I bought a Fast PNY Turbo 3.0 USB 3 flash drive. It was a 256 gig.
Okay.
And I paid $134 for it.
You fool.
And now, and Staples has the best price of any mainstream retailer, $49.99. And wow. The thing screams. It's 185 megabit per second read and 135 megabit per second write, which is really, really fast for a flash drive. And
but do you really need 256 gigs?
Well, I'm gonna say that in just a second. So
okay.
Also the Lexar 256 gig USB 3 drive is also the same price, a little slower read and write, but you know, it's under $50 as well. So you know, if they're out of the PNY and you don't need super speed, then you can go with the Lexar easily. Both good quality drives. Now, here's one of the things that was really interesting. My wife has her big travel in January and February to Europe, and she's in Paris and Germany, and then back to Germany a second time, and then she goes down to New York. She's just all over the place, and we were watching the shows The Mentalist together, you know, old archive shows, seven seasons. And she had the last three seasons. And while she was gone, I started to get ahead of her on her first trip. So I downloaded all of the seasons, and then I authorized her computer, her laptop. And so she had 160 some gigs worth of shows on one of these 256 gig drives. And she streamed from there through her laptop. And she goes, it was awesome, because she's on the plane watching these shows and all of that. So that's one of the big advantages, is to be able to do that. I even sometimes pull stuff off the TiVo that's recorded, and throw them on one of these thumb drives. And it's much faster than, you know, trying to send stuff from computer to computer over Wi-Fi and all of that. So
there you go. I would also suggest that you don't necessarily need 256 gig. You could get the PNY Turbo 128 for $20.
Right.
Same price, Staples.
Right.
There's your little tip.
There you go.
I bought that same one though for under $20.
Did you really? The 256?
Yeah. The 128.
Oh, the 128.
That's what I have in my Surface Pro.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Nice.
It's good. High quality. Works great.
You know, I find that I'm not using flash drives as nearly as much now that, you know, we basically have AirDrop. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Doing a lot of that. So. My cool thing of the week is that I just happened to work for Fast Company's most innovative company of 2016.
Wow.
Sweet. It's
true. Just wanted to let you know. But that was my cool thing.
Not you're bragging or anything.
Not at all. Not at all. Wonderful article in Fast Company with the Jonah Peretti, and also a follow-up article with Dao Nguyen, who is our CEO, or our publisher.
And Zay Frank.
And Zay Frank, who is, you know, kind of a legend in his own time as well.
That's right.
BuzzFeed Motion Pictures.
You know?
He needs what?
He needs to make more videos.
Well, he's only, what, doing 80 a week? So.
Is he really? Wow.
Yeah. BuzzFeed Motion Pictures does anywhere between 65 and 80 short form videos a week.
So nice.
We are. Yeah, that's a real growth part of our business.
These old silly videos. I don't mean like these slick ones he's doing now.
The old silly videos.
The old silly ones, you know?
I want the old silly videos. So
I had no idea about this. Once the Board at Work network, BuzzFeed is now a globally distributed digital media powerhouse, read by 79 million people every month.
Yep.
That is stunning.
It is. Yeah. It's epic.
Wow.
Gives you a view of the future that's, you know, it's kind of frightening.
I mean, it's interesting to see, you know me, I'm the jaded old media guy, and it's pretty exciting to be at a media company that is really, really defining what, you know, we used to call new media. What was that back in the early 2000s? We called it new media, but
that's right.
It is very interesting sort of writing the rule book as we go along. So it's very exciting stuff.
Nice.
Yay.
Tim, what's yours, buddy?
Well, mine is the latest in a succession of laptop convertible deals that we've talked about over the years. And this is called NextDock, and it's basically similar to other ones that I've talked about in the past. This is on Indiegogo. The idea is you take a smartphone. In this case, it works best with a Windows 10 smartphone, which about 40 people have purchased.
Globally.
48. It all
works with iOS and Android and Linux, and you can hook a Raspberry Pi to it. And it's basically the screen and a keyboard of a laptop, but it has no storage, it has no computing power, and it basically projects whatever is on the portable device, whether it be a smartphone or a tablet. So you can do a lot of different things here. So if you want to carry a smartphone and have a small laptop kind of device and use the same device for everything, it's $99 on Indiegogo right now. It's going to be $149 when it ships later in the year, presumably, or whenever it goes live. So it's an interesting idea, and my goal is to have a single device, and then you're able to use that single device as your storage along with into the cloud, of course.
Yeah.
And just, you know, use that single device and not have to manage multiple devices. And this is a way to do that now. So it's just, I saw it this week and I thought it was cool.
Very nice. Well, I'm hearing some weird feedback from myself, but so I hope nobody else hears that. But
I heard it.
We have several upcoming events. Here's one, the 6th Annual Minnesota Entrepreneur Kickoff, which is next Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, the 23rd. Looks like a very interesting event. And obviously it's entrepreneurs, you know, overall, it's not just tech entrepreneurs.
Which is kind of nice. You should, you know, even if you're just sort of, you find yourself going to all the tech events, you should really kind of get out of the box and go to other events as well, because there's a lot of stuff happening, not just in tech, as far as the entrepreneurial space in
Minneapolis. That's right. That's exactly right.
Twin Cities Startup Weekend slated for the 26th through 28th. That
education focused one.
Excuse me. That's the weekend education. That's right. So.
Yep.
I found this conference and a colleague forwarded this on to me after we had our Mobile Twin Cities event about overcoming the gender gap in mobile tech with Nancy Lyons on Tuesday night. And somebody forwarded this on to me, the AlterConf, which is happening at Lead Pages on April 9th. This looks like an interesting, a very interesting conference that is, provides safe opportunities for marginalized people and those who support them in the tech and gaming industries. So
interesting.
It's kind of an interesting thing. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that's all about. And that comes up the 9th of April.
Huh. Interesting.
And of course, IoT Fuse.
On April 22nd.
Right.
And Mini Webcoms coming up on the 25th. And then, Tim, you put in WordCamp, Minneapolis.
End of May. Yeah, May 20th.
Yay!
Second, coming back. $20, I think, something like that.
I love me a good...
$40 for general admission.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. So
I remember back in the day when it was $20.
Back in the day.
Well, that's for Saturday and Sunday. There's the Friday workshops that are...
Right.
They're calling it Foundation Friday. And these are actually kind of interesting. Intro to WordPress is one of them. Another one's Designing for WordPress. And the third one is WordPress development. And each one of those is $20, respectively. Hmm. So.
Sounds like something I might have to do.
Yeah, I know. Right. I hear you.
That's great. I love that. So, but there's all sorts of things going on, and we'll do our best to talk about it next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast. Take care, guys.